This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Whoa, welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, here in the studio of Tan Talk Radio Network. It is so wonderful to be here. And Big Ed in the control room, he just wiped down everything. He even wiped the doorknob of the building for me because... you know, you have to be careful. And my husband was in the hospital. He's home now. I'm so happy that he's home. But it's because of, you know, things like this that we want to make sure that it's so hard when you have somebody in the hospital and you can't visit them. So I'm just so grateful to Ed. Thank you, Ed. He's saluting me. That's nice. I get a salute right at the beginning of the show, and I'll get one at the end because Ed does everything to keep this place working and running, and he's been really doing sort of double duty here, not just controlling everything, but also making sure everything is clean and organized here. So I'm really thrilled that he's here, and I'm going to have two great interviews today. I'm going to go straight from one to the other, and then I'll do the commercials, especially for Larson & Larson. I want to thank them so much for all of their support, and also Glenn Erickson. But right now, I get to talk to somebody who is British. Hi. Hello. it is really exciting to welcome Danny Dorling to talk today.
Hello,
about...
Dad.
Hi. You're where are you? Are you in England?
I'm in England. I mean, right in the middle in Oxford, in England.
Oh, you're in Oxford. Oh, well, I know it very well. I know. When I was 21 years old, I bought a cottage in Sonning. Do you know where Sonning is by Henley?
Yeah. Near Sonning Common, yeah.
Yes, that's where I bought a cottage, and I moved there.
Go on.
So I spent many years in England. Love Oxford. And it's always a thrill for me to talk to anybody from with a British accent. Yeah. It makes me feel cozy and home.
That's fine. I was born in Oxford, so I really am from Oxford. So.
I won't ask
when you were 21, though, just in case we're in the same.
Oh yeah, let's not go there. Let's not go there.
No.
That's a few years back. I'll just tell you, it might give you an idea. I paid £19,000 at the time for the cottage, and it's a 400-year-old cottage. So think back.
We're talking,
A little while ago.
1970.
No, well, it was. It's a long time since something cost £19,000 in England.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I love Oxford. And of course, it was wonderful to get your book, which is called Slow Down, The End of the Great Acceleration, and Why It's Good for the Planet, the Economy, and Our Lives to Slow Down. Why it's, this book comes out at an interesting time, doesn't it?
It does. Because people think things are speeding up, and of course, the pandemic means that they suddenly slowed down. But what I was trying to say in the book is that they've been slowing for some time. House prices are a brilliant one to use. My mum and dad bought their first house in Oxford for £400. And there was this incredible acceleration in house prices, doubling again. Whereas now, although they might still be rising, they only rise by 5% or 2%. You know, they don't double. So what I was trying to say is that even things that are going up are not going up as fast as they were in the past. The past was moving quicker.
Well, you know, the whole premise of your book is fascinating, and I wanted to mention that, of course, your position, I found it interesting that you're really started off or still continue to be in geography, which was my favorite subject in school.
I'm glad you like that. Yeah, I mean, geographers are allowed to look at almost anything, so I look at how slowdown is different around the world. I meant to look at things that were speeding up, I just couldn't find very many. But we're allowed to study what we like, which is great.
Well, it's a wonderful discipline, and I mean, to be in Oxford is like that would have been my dream if I would have ever been able to do that, because it is such a wonderful place. And one of the reasons I used to go there, because I could always find wonderful old books. And over the years, while I lived in England, I kept collecting books. So when I moved back to America, I had like 5,000 books. So that's why
you went well.
Yeah, well,
this year is a good year to come if you want, because of course this year coming is the year in which we expect the lowest number of people ever to come to Oxford. So if anybody's thinking of coming, now
October,
November, 2020 would be the time. Oh yeah.
Whoa. Well, where do we start with this book? Because you know, as I said, it's this is our crazy year here. 2020, which nobody will ever forget. When I look back on my childhood, I had such a delightful childhood. I lived in northern Michigan, and everything was very slow there and behind the time. And so I feel sorry for the youth of today who are facing this. But what is your basic idea here about how we should slow down, other than being locked up?
Locking up is no good at all. But our economy was already slowing down. The economic growth was fastest in the 1950s, and it became slower, slightly in the 60s, slow in the 70s, slow in the 80s, and on and on. And always when it slowed down, we blamed something like the oil shock or a particular thing. But we didn't realize economically we were slowing. Innovation was fastest in the 1930s, probably, the most new inventions that had a big effect on people's lives. Even our numbers, they began slowing by the 1970s, as we have fewer people. So we should recognize we were already slowing down. It won't have been caused by this pandemic, it could be said beforehand. But it's much easier to cope with a slowdown if you accept it, embrace it, and plan for it. Now, young people have a terrible... Well, young people who are leaving school or leaving university are in a terrible situation right now, and a government should really plan for them. But their future wasn't looking that great anyway. They were looking at precarious employment, low-paid employment, having to pay rent for all of their lives, very unlikely to be able to get themselves to buy a house, and a minority nowadays can buy a house. So where we were before the pandemic was not brilliant. The pandemic is awful. But coming out of it, we should think, what do we really want and what do we really value? And simple things like security of food and security of a home obviously suddenly matter much more to us than they did before when we just took them for granted.
Well, you know, as a child, we had a farm. And so we were, in so many ways, so much better off than most people today, because we had the farm, we had the chickens, we had the cows, and we could sustain ourselves. And of course, we had all the wild raspberries and strawberries and blueberries we could eat. It was a slower life, but it was, I think, a much more pleasant life.
Oh, it will have been. But there's amazing research done in the United States that looks at children from the 1950s onwards and actually looks at their mental health. And I mean, it's a sad story, but what it finds is that I think about 10 years ago, a majority of American children, if you assessed them by 1950s, 60s standards, you would say they're suffering from anxiety, they're suffering from depression, they're really worried about the future. Whereas the slower, and this is objective, the nice thing is this is using the same survey, because we always look back with rose-tinted glasses. We're very good as human beings at forgetting about the pain, forgetting the things that weren't nice and remembering the good side of life. But when you objectively use the same surveys of child mental health, you can see that we were going in the wrong direction. Our young people were anxious because their futures looked so precarious. They were having to amass enormous debt just to go to college to get a degree, which wasn't necessarily going to get them a job that was any good anyway. And they had to fight each other to try to be the one that succeeded. And it wasn't the same in the past, and it need not be the same in the future. It doesn't produce you an economy that is robust. We know that now. You know, so we should try to come out of this pandemic heading towards something far better, having had a realization that our system was not safe. Because, of course, at least this pandemic will prepare us much better for the next one. But there'll always be a next one, and we just haven't prepared for this one. And part of being prepared is actually having somewhere safe to live, having your loved ones near you, having your health looked after, being able to get the basic staples in life. Those kind of things, which, of course, people who are very poor couldn't get, they suddenly became incredibly important to the large majority of people.
Well, as I've been thinking so much about, because I work with a lot of publicists who live in New York City, and they are in these tall apartment buildings, locked up, and they have to take a long elevator ride, you know, to go downstairs, if they can go downstairs. And I feel so sorry for them. I mean, I'm in Florida. I have a wide open spaces, and it's you know, lovely. Mm. And I think more people will realize that perhaps these tall buildings where everybody's, you know, in a square box might not be the best answer for the future.
No, this thing can change. The same with an area called Canary Wharf in London, the skyscrapers in London. The finance houses and banks that occupy them cannot work out how to get their workers back in because there aren't enough elevators if you try and only have four people in an elevator. But their workers can work at home. They've worked out they can do that. So you don't need people to come into the skyscrapers. You certainly don't need to build more skyscrapers. But this kind of thing has happened before, ironically, with tall, thin buildings. 250 years ago, house prices peaked in real terms in Amsterdam on one of the canals where the Amsterdam canal houses were. And then the actual value of this was the most expensive house in the world at the time. The value of it in real terms fell for 250 years. Now, the same can happen with the Empire State Building. It's the same, you know, it is not foretold that things carry on going as they are, particularly with a slowdown already underway. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think we simply need to not build more buildings of that particular kind. And we do need to plan. So when this happens again, how are we going to allow people not to be imprisoned, particularly people with small children? Publicists with 2, 3, or 4-year-olds in some of those New York apartments. We need to plan far better than we have planned.
Oh, exactly, because some of the publicists I deal with, they work for the big houses, Random House, and all of those, and they are home now with their kids in, you know, very small, relatively small apartments with big elevators that have to go 20 floors. And It is very hard for the children.
Yeah, it's hard. But you've got to remember the lunacy of this is, and these were some of the most expensive pieces of real estate on the planet. You know, the last place you'd actually want to be now was the place you have to pay the most, the rent. You know, the rent in that part of New York is astronomical. So you're paying an absolute fortune for the privilege of being in a prison cell. And it's these are the kind of things where we had been going in the wrong direction over what we were doing. Partly simply because we thought this makes money. You have to do it like this. This makes the most money. New York is like London. Publishing here is, of course, concentrated in London. So you have to be in London if you're going to be a publicist, a publishing book firm. And then you have people absolutely struggling to live in the most expensive city in Europe because that's what's required for their job. A lot of this is solvable. We have at least learned how we can have meetings without having to get on the train or drive for 2 or 3 hours to see somebody. We're not going to stop seeing people, but certainly the real estate value at the very centres of our density cities, I can see no reason why they should not begin to fall quite substantially.
Oh, just thinking about the tube stations and how crowded they are in normal times, how crowded they were. And I can't imagine getting on a tube today.
No, and of course, the number of people going on a tube now is much lower. But good news here, you've got to remember, the UK has had the worst worst pandemic in all of Europe. Very bad, bad situation. But it's on the way down now. Yesterday, for the first time, there was not a single new case in 24 hours in London. So the pandemic does begin to does go. And the tube, not a single new case of all testing in London didn't find somebody positive with the disease. So it's good news. Elsewhere in the UK, lots and lots of cases.
So are you in favour of are you in favour of developments like Milton Keynes, for example? Milton Keynes is a special place in England. Do you recommend that's our future?
Milton Keynes is very successful. This is a new town built half an hour's train ride out of London to the north, low density. It's partly our future, but also our numbers are declining. You know, since the early 70s, we've been having mostly less than two children each. So that we don't need that many much more housing for the future population. What we do need to do, though, is share the housing out better. So in rural parts of Britain, particularly the prettiest rural parts, more and more of the housing has been bought as a holiday home, a second home, and it's empty most of the year. Now, that is the place where the publicist would love to live, who is officially working in London, but actually spends all the time in a small house but with a garden next to the sea in somewhere like Devon. Now, to get that, we don't have to build more houses, but we do have to say, really, owning two or three houses becomes unacceptable in future. Now, that may sound a bit draconian, but if you want to have a better future, particularly for the young, you can't have a small group of people using up more and more and more of a housing stock.
Well, yeah, that's a bit draconian because it's funny. Now, we had a farm, but we had because we had to get away from the little town that we were in. We also had a little cabin on a lake. So I was thinking, don't take that away from us. But one of the things,
the cabin's fine. Okay, I'll give you a model of a place where this will work. So in Finland, most families have a little cabin on the lake. Okay. Huge numbers of families have a second house in Finland. Finland also has the lowest rate of homelessness in the world, almost zero. Nobody on the streets. Because of that, they have a housing policy. It is possible to do both, but the thing about the cabins on the lake is they're not houses that you would normally want to live in all year round. They literally are a home that is only used for holiday. It's when you take a normal family house that you could bring a family up in, and you take that away and it becomes the place that you just use for a few weeks in the year and leave empty for the rest of the year, that's when you've got a problem.
Okay, I see. Because I thought you were going to take away our cabin. And it was so nice to have that cabin, I tell you. The funny thing, I'm half Finnish, so that's in northern Michigan.
Okay.
So that's how we live. I mean, we all had a cabin on the lake.
Do you know the story of 1918 and why so many Finns went to Michigan?
Tell us.
Okay, so there was a civil war in Finland right about 1918. A very bloody civil war, a thing called the Terror. And the side that lost, quite a lot of them emigrated to Michigan. And one of the reasons why Michigan is more politically left-wing is it was the left-wing side that lost.
Yes.
And famously, they formed some of the brigades that fought in the Spanish Civil War. And they were Finnish.
Yeah, I know.
But they weren't seen as Finnish anymore because of their children.
My grandfather came because of that. And the funny thing is, when he arrived in Ellis Island... Okay, now listen to this. Mm-hmm. He arrived in Ellis Island, and they said, they gave him two options. They said he could go to northern Michigan, a place called Pelkey, Michigan, and you can get your 40 acres there, or you can go to St. Petersburg, Florida, and get 40 acres. Now, my grandfather, they told him, you know, what kind of temperature they have in St. Petersburg, Florida. He said, I'm going to Michigan. And we still have that land. We still have that land, and it's about as valuable as when he got it. if he had gotten 40 acres in St. Petersburg, Florida, I would be a zillionaire.
You would, but he would have hated how hot it was.
Oh, he would.
Finland,
right? Oh, he couldn't stand it. He couldn't stand it. Yeah. No, he, but I think of it. Every once in a while, I think of it.
if only they'd done it. But this is the kind of changes that happen. Think of Finland and the way Finland was almost the poorest country in Europe when your grandfather left it. You know, seen as a complete backwater, things were going wrong. Terrible situation in the Second World War. Now Finland is seen as one of the most successful countries on the continent. There are five women in charge. There's a coalition of five political parties. Five women, four of them in their 30s. And, well, last story about Finland. Only one country in Europe was prepared for the pandemic. It was Finland, which had been storing personal protective equipment since 1957 in case of a pandemic. This is why I'm a geographer, because you can look at different places and you can try and learn from them and say, you know, what was it about Finland? Why have they ended up
and
in such a...
You know, when this pandemic started, I already had 100 bottles of water in my house.
Uh-huh.
This is before the pandemic started.
Yeah.
So there must be something in us.
Yes, yes. Whether there were centuries of things going wrong in Finland, you know, but the kind of a folk message of get ready for the next one. But also there's a joke in Europe, because I don't know what the distance is there. Here it's in metric. You're supposed to stay 2 meters apart from each other always with the pandemic. And the joke in Europe is that people in Finland don't actually ever get nearer than 2 meters to each other anyway.
That's it. Oh yes, that's true. Yeah. We're known for not talking. So it's funny.
Yeah.
But I think you are absolutely delightful, and I hope that you do well with this book. I think it's intriguing, and definitely something different to read. And you have some really great ideas and solutions in there. And the name of the book is Slow Down: The End of the Great Acceleration and Why It's Good for the Planet, the Economy, and Our Lives. And it's by Danny Dorling. And Danny, you have a website you want people to visit?
I do. It's very easy. There aren't many Danny Dorlings in the world, Dorling. Just Google Danny Dorling, Slow Down. There's a website. You click on the picture of the book, and you get to see 67 animated dancing graphs. The other place to find the book is University of Yale Press, because it's Yale University Press who are publishing it.
Well,
I do hope people have a look at Slowdown.
Well, I enjoyed it very much, and I think you're fascinating. And actually, you know, I would like, once I have get... I was out of the studio for 4 weeks, and I was broadcasting from either my bathroom or my kitchen. But sometime, perhaps in the summertime, you could come back on. And I would just love to talk to you more about the book and also about geography in general, because I think it's a subject students, you know, they drop that course in America. And I think it's such a shame, because what happened to you? You study geography and it leads you to so many other subjects.
It does. It leads you all over the place. Thank you ever so much for having me on. I'd love to come back on again.
Okay. Well, Danny Dorling, I really enjoyed talking to somebody in Oxford. It's just so much fun for me. So take care and take care of yourself over there, and I'll have you back in the summer, okay?
Cheers, then. Definitely, it's a deal. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye now. Whoa. What a guy. Oh, Oxford. Oh, I love Oxford. Oh, and it's almost very inviting to be told that there aren't people, and I could just get to Oxford and have the city to myself. Oh, I'd love to have the libraries to myself. I spent my time when I was in over there. What I did is they had secondhand bookstores there. Unbelievable. Many of the books right next to my computer, I would say at least 40 books were bought in Oxford at secondhand bookstores or little book sales. So I had a wonderful, wonderful time there. And among the books I bought many books on mythology while I was there. And so my next guest, this is so exciting. I tell you, I am always, always so happy to talk about mythology in general. And then today I have somebody back on the program, Crispin Boyer. I love that name. Isn't that a perfect name? And the name of the book is Zeus the Mighty, The Maze of the Menacing Minotaur. Hi, Crispin.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Okay.
Always a pleasure.
I get such a kick out of your name. I just think it's got to be one of my favorite names. Just like, it's great.
Thank you very much.
And of course, we are back with National Geographic Kids' new title, Zeus the Mighty. And you know, I talked to Becky Baines the other day.
Oh, you did? Oh, wow. She's my boss.
Yeah, I know she's your boss. I was talking to her. She's promoting, of course, the Nat Geo new almanac for 2021. And so it was so much fun to have her back on. And I said to her, you know, you people who work with Nat Geo are the luckiest people in the world. I mean, how can you have so much fun, you know, just doing these books that you love?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a dream job. I've been working with them for since 2008 now, and I've written more than 15 books, but those were all nonfiction. So this series I'm working on now, Zeus the Mighty, is my first fiction series. So it's learning an entirely new kind of writing skill, but also having a blast because, you know, it's just fun subject matter.
Well, I know Becky came out with the idea, right?
She created the concept and gave me the kind of the parameters and characters and said, now you go and have fun in this world.
And you ran with it because you've taken off. I mean, this is so much fun. This series is so much fun. And I just want to tell everyone, first of all, the books are hardback. Wonderful, wonderful gifts for children. The kind of books that they will save. Beautiful illustrations. And just the wonderful story. Of course, as I said, I love mythology, and I just love it. At the beginning of the book, you have you explain about the different characters. So let's talk. Of course, Zeus. I mean, I don't even have to say it. I mean, Zeus is you know, just the natural leader. He's yeah. You know, he's just there. He knows what he's doing all the time. He really doesn't ever get lost because he's Zeus after all. And you have created.
Well, that's what he'd like you to think.
I know.
He's got a big ego.
Well, for a little hamster, he's a big guy.
That's right.
So tell us about.
He's joined by his other Olympian friends. He's got Athena the cat. She's the goddess of wisdom. There's Poseidon the pufferfish, who's the lord of the oceans, and he butts heads with Zeus because Zeus thinks he's king of everything. You got Ares the pug, who's a little ball of energy and gets into trouble. And then you have Demeter, who's the goddess of the harvest. She's Zeus's best friend, and she's kind of the little angel on his shoulder, tries to keep him on the straight and narrow.
Oh, she's cute. I love it. She has a little bit of lettuce with her to nibble on. And
that's
just
right.
You know, it's so wonderful, really, that somebody can give you an author an idea. And then, of course, you've had your own background and love of mythology to bring into it. And you've created such wonderful characters.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about these stories, Greek mythology. You know, they're more than 2,000 years old, and they just started as oral tales that would be told from city to city. And then slowly they were started to become written down and then evolved over time. And they've been reimagined so many times, and you'd think that there's nothing new to really pull from it, but that's not true at all, because there's so many different heroes and monsters and treasures and magical artifacts and visibility helmets and flying horses. And of course, it's fun to then take readers back into that kind of world, but also maybe, you know, sneak in some history and other, you know, education and information, especially now that kids are spending more time at home and parents are kind of having to be teachers. This is a way to kind of sneak in some education, but really just entertain the kids with fun stories.
And it, the thing is, it does open your eyes when you learn, even just learning the names when you're young, it carries through for the rest of your life. You recognize the names, and you've developed the characters, I think, just perfectly. Tell us about Artemis or Artie Ambrosia and what this wonderful place is in. My goodness, Athens, Georgia.
Well, that's right. So Artemis, Artie for short, is the owner of Mount Olympus Pet Rescue Center. The only thing that she loves more than rescuing animals is Greek mythology. And her love of mythology rubs off on the animals at her pet center. So she, every day to pass the time, she plays a podcast called Greeking Out on her phone. It's hosted by the Oracle of Wi-Fi, and it just goes into a different mythological tale, say, like explains the underworld or the Golden Fleece, or in the case of this book, the Labyrinth and the Minotaur. The animals all sit around and they listen to the podcast. They think it's actually kind of the framework for their next adventure. So they learn all this information from the podcast. And then when Artie leaves every night, they go out on this adventure and relive it within the pet center. So they'll say they want to fight the Hydra. They'll come across a floor fan and with its five, you know, fan blades. To them, that looks like a Hydra monster. So they'll figure out ways to defeat it. And then, of course, Artie will return the next day and find that her fan has been smashed and wonder what the heck happened. But, you know, the animals have once again banished the monster and saved Greece. So that's kind of how it works. The animals all believe that they are these god characters and goddesses. And they see the pet center as Greece. But, of course, the reader knows that it's actually just the pet center. And that's half the fun, is figuring out what the animals see and what is real life.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm telling you, I'm reading the book. I know they're characters, and I know they're animals, but they seem very real to me. Just like I'm like, okay, they're real. So it just shows that you are so talented, and that you really I feel the joy that you must have in being able to come out with these clever ideas.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's helped a lot by the illustration. So the illustrator does a really good job of kind of showing, say, you know, whenever the animals travel around on the Argo, which is their vessel, but it's actually a robot vacuum. You know, the reader can see the animals all riding on this robot vacuum off on their next adventure. It really helps kind of bridge the gap between the imaginary world of the animals and then the real world of the pet rescue center. And also it's cool for me as a writer to like write these stories and then see them come to life in these illustrations.
Well, you know, for Valentine's Day, my husband bought me one of these motorized robot thingies to go around the house. And now all I can think about is, maybe I better get a hamster. You know, it's so cute. It's really, I don't know. Tell us a little bit about you. I don't have much time about your background, but you just, in general, how did you have all of these ideas in your head?
I've been a writer for about 30 years. And like I said before, it was all nonfiction. But I guess when I write all these books about history and science and sharks and ninjas and pirates for National Geographic, after a while, this stuff, I guess, maybe builds up somewhere in my brain and kind of helps me. And you know, part of it too is, so, you know, they ride around in the robot vacuum. And I remember seeing viral videos online of cats that would ride around on robot vacuums. And it just seemed like a natural form of transportation for these animals to get around the pet center. And that, you know, it's part of the challenge is coming up with say that the animals need to fight Medusa. Well, what in their world could be a snake, a monster with snake hair that would freeze you with its gaze? And you know, that's kind of the challenge. It's like, okay, so what in their environment could substitute, could they see as this? And you know, that's the fun for me is trying to figure out these challenges and then present it to the reader.
Well, you have done a remarkable job, and I, as you said, you know, right now, of course, so many kids are at home. So this series, the entire series, and there are going to be many more books, I'm sure, And it's Zeus the Mighty. And this one is called The Maze of the Menacing Minotaur. I don't think there's an end to how many books you can write. You can write 100 of these books. We were very happy with
plans for 7 right now, but I'll go to 100 if you want.
Yeah, going. Absolutely. There are enough stories that you can bring to life. And as I said, it's great for young people to learn these words, these names, these concepts early, and then they'll go on and read the Iliad, maybe in Latin, like my son did.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually can read a little bit. I was a Latin student too for a long time, and so I love Latin. And so you never know what is going to happen in life, and that's why it's so wonderful to just fill your mind with a lot of knowledge. And I do want to mention one of the people that has helped you with the book is Dr. Diane Harris Klein, and she's at GW, where my son did his undergraduate work.
And, oh wow! Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and so I was aware of her and aware of her great book, which is called "The Greeks: An Illustrated History." So, all of you parents out there, if you get Dr. Diane Harris Klein's book, you can go up a level and, you know, relate with your kids to these stories that I think Crispin Boyer has. Just this name, I love this name. You're like some romantic character in a historical novel. He's Crispin Boyer. I just imagine.
I'll have to tell my wife that.
Yeah, and she has a lovely name too. So let's say hi to her. How's she handling this pandemic?
Oh, we're good. I mean, we actually live on a farm in Hawaii, so we're.
Oh,
we're
you
fine.
Don't care about this pandemic. You're a happy guy out there. That's wonderful. That's great.
Well, we're managing.
You're
Thank
managing.
You for asking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I love her name too. It's Rama, and I think that's a beautiful name. And so, I was wondering, you know,
thank you.
She must really have a lot of. You bounce all your ideas off of her.
She is my first editor. Yes.
Yeah.
She's my first source of inspiration and my first editor. Yes. So, no, definitely. Yeah, we make a good team.
Well, you certainly do. And I want to thank you so much, Crispin, again, for being on Joy on Paper. And where should people go to see more about the Nat Geo book and this book in particular?
Well, they can go to ZeusTheMighty.com. There they can play some games based on the book. They can learn about the characters, learn some of the history behind it, and they can buy the book there. Or they can just go to Amazon or really anywhere books are sold.
Okay. Well, again, Crispin, you know, it's just, I love thinking of you there in Hawaii, nice and safe in the fresh air and away from all of this that so many, you know, the publicists and so many of the people at Nat Geo are in New York City. And I feel...
Yeah,
I feel very sorry for them because it's really hard. So I'm glad that you're out there and that you're safe and that you've written this wonderful, wonderful series. And as I said, I'm sure that Zeus the Mighty, you know, when I was a kid, we had the Hardy Boys and we had all of those books. And we still have the collection. I mean, we have like 100 of those of the Hardy Boy books. You know, in the original blue ones. And so people will just love to have these hardback books and wonderful gifts for all you grandparents who can't see your grandchildren right now. Send them this book, Zeus the Mighty. Send them all of them. But the new one is The Maze of the Menacing Minotaur. Okay?
I can't thank you enough for the great chat and telling me about how much you enjoy the books. And, I'd love to talk to you when the next one comes out.
Okay, absolutely. And I'll tell Becky that you did a great job on this interview today. She should give you a raise. That's what I say. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I can't thank you enough.
Okay.
Please stay safe and healthy, and I'll talk to you next time.
Okay. Thank you so much. I love it. The name Crispin Boyer. I love it. Okay. Oh, what a sweet guy. We're going to do a commercial, and then when we come back, I'm going to do something. I don't know. Maybe I'll find a book buzz. Let's find a book buzz number 12.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I'm going to play a book buzz. Did we find number 12? Let's play number 12. I don't even remember which one this is, but we'll talk about it afterwards.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with Book Buzz. Do you enjoy a mystery set in another time and place? How about the Roaring Twenties? Then Ripples, Spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore by Vonsu Brandvik is a mystery for you. Here's the buzz. Liliana Throne still suffers from serious injuries she received in the car accident that took the life of her son 3 years ago. When she learns her grandmother has only a few days to live, she grabs the first flight to Florida and checks into the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. Her marriage is in ruins, and she's plagued with horrific nightmares of the accident and visions of her late son. So the last thing she needs is spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore invading her dreams to share their memories from the Roaring Twenties. But soon the spirits teach her that death is not as black and white as she believed it to be, and neither is love or marriage. The Bellevue Biltmore Hotel, 95% of this hotel was demolished in 2015, is the inspiration and setting for Bonsu's Spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore novel series. By capturing and preserving the essence of the historic Bellevue Biltmore Resort, the author hopes memories of the grand hotel will live on for many generations to come. So transport yourself today with Vonsu Brandvik's Ripples, Spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore, and relive the memories of the grand old hotel. Hey, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Hey, it's Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Oh, wow. Okay, that was with Rita. Okay, Rita is, she's so wonderful. And I am so grateful to her for doing these book buzzes to help promote books, because right now authors need all the help they can get. They have all of their book signings have been canceled. The book tours have been canceled. The book conventions have been canceled. It is going to be a very rough time for authors. So anything we can do to help promote authors is just wonderful. So thank you, Rita Moreau. And I'm glad that I picked, isn't it funny? I just picked number 12 out of a hat, or in this case, probably out of my mask, which I wear constantly. And because it is set in the Roaring Twenties, and I've been thinking a lot about, 2020, and what we are going to call these years, don't make them the boring 20s. Don't let yourself just get so bogged down in depression and worry and fear. Use this time. You're going to look back on it. And this is a time to use and find something special in your life. One of the things, of course, if you've been dreaming of writing, this is the time to start writing. I mean, even if you your mind sort of is drifting all over the place, at least you can start with the research, all of the, or reading books about that period of time that you're going to be writing about. Use the time wisely. Don't turn it into the boring 20s. Make it into the fun 20s. Maybe the start of a new, something new in your life, something wonderful in your life. And particularly for you parents out there, I was a homeschool mom for many years. I loved it. I am so grateful that I spent so much time homeschooling, because it is an opportunity to get to know your kids, to get to spend time with your kids, and they will know that this special time. So right now, and make it fun. And I really am sort of a little bit upset with people when they get all carried away that they have to go exactly by the curriculum that the school sends them. I've never believed in that. I've always believed really in immersive learning. I'm the kind of reader, when I read something, if I read Tolstoy, I read everything Tolstoy wrote, because I wanted to see the development of how just his writing. And this is why I have so many books. But if your kid is interested in math, then run with math. You don't have to just, you know, do a worksheet a day. Let them run. I've taken kids, my son's friends, and I took them from being able to add, you know, two-digit numbers, and in a few days, a few weeks, I'm having them do algebra, because I turned it into something fun. Algebra is fun because you're always looking for X. It becomes a mystery. And so there are so many things that you can do, and particularly when I talked to Danny Dorling, in Oxford, he is a geographer, and geography is a way to really, really learn history. Let your kids just make maps all over the place. If you are lucky enough that you have a driveway, give them chalk. Let them make maps of every country. Play games with them. Play hopscotch on countries. There are so many wonderful things that you can do when you have your kids with you, and so. Don't look at it as a negative. Look as a positive. This is an opportunity. Don't make it a boring 20s for them. Make it that they'll look back and they'll say, whoa, those were some of the best months of my life. I spent time with my parents, and my parents listened to me, and we talked, and we learned things together. We read together. And why are Audible books so popular? Audible books are popular because it's like being a kid again when your mother and father would read to you. Now, you can still read to your kid. Kids, you know, even if they're 10 years old, they still love you to read to them. Take a little bit advanced book and read it to them and make, you know, the characters come alive. Take Treasure Island and read it. It's so much better than them to watch a cartoon or watch a movie. If you animated yourself with your own voice, and you could even video record you doing it, this is a wonderful, wonderful way to share with your kids. So please find the joy that I've talked about over and over. And my throat is going because I have all of this antibacterial stuff around me. And I have to have a drink, because otherwise my throat is going to just dry up here. But again, take this opportunity to make this into a productive time, a time where you learn something about yourself, mostly reach out to your family, and you see the value of having a wonderful family. And if they're not wonderful, turn turn them into wonderful people. Discover whatever the problems are that existed in your life between your family members and solve it and realize that life can be absolutely wonderful if you make it wonderful. And it's up to you, you know. Just like having, at the beginning of the program, I say this is a program for people who are writers and those who dream of writing. And when the next year when I go to book fairs and book conventions, I hope that I meet many people. Well, first of all, I hope I meet many people in general, but many people who say, I started writing during the pandemic and I learned that it can be a joyful process. It doesn't matter what the book is about. It could a recipe book, a biography, a memoir, a novel, fantasy, whatever, poetry. It will just add depth and dimension to your life, and it will change you because you will be going to book conventions, which are so much fun. And by next year, we will be all doing that again. And one thing please don't write so many books about the pandemic. I know it's sort of, it's like, were all of the books during the plague in Europe, were they all about the plague? I hope not. I mean, there were other things. So I'm terrified. Starting somewhere when they start publishing books again, I'm going to have 10 books a week about the pandemic. And I don't know if I will read them. I'm going to read. I am actually going to be looking forward to the next edition of Zeus the Mighty. These are wonderful books. You really, really have to read them. And make sure that you also start buying Nat Geo books, just as a habit. If you're visiting people, when you start visiting people or you're sending gifts, send a Nat Geo book, because there is no gift more appreciated, no book more appreciated than a Nat Geo book, because they do actually last a lifetime. I have books, Nat Geo magazines that are like, I don't know, from the 50s. So I don't know when, sometime after the war, whenever my parents started getting Nat Geo books. So it is just a wonderful, wonderful thing to do, to give Nat Geo kids books, Nat Geo adult books as gifts. And that's about it for today, because my throat is going because of all of these antibacterial things around here. But remember what I always say, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, hear them spoken in audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like for Carol J. Perry, because that's what I wanted to see. I want her to be on the Hallmark Channel. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, or say something nice to everybody that you see today, and especially to anybody who's working in grocery stores or driving a truck or all of those things that really they are essential. And anyway, also to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you so much for everything. And I really appreciate it. Wow, it's a weekend again. Enjoy yourselves. Find the joy. And get some fresh air. I have to get out of here. My throat is going. Bye-bye now. Oh, and Ed saluted me, and I saluted him. Bye.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
Special report, coronavirus update. The NIH's Dr. Anthony Fauci seems to be raising concern about the reopening efforts now underway in 50 states.
The scientific evidence clearly indicates that physical separation has worked, but not completely. If you look at the curves in our country, it isn't like everything is dramatically going down.
Fauci spoke to the anti-poverty group One. Pressure to reopen grows with today's jobless report showing unemployment claims at 39 million. Here's Christine Romans.
Here we are in a very, very deep hole. And every week, more people are filing for unemployment benefits, 9 weeks in a row in the millions. Now, remember, a couple of those weeks, it was 6 million plus. So 2, 2.5, 3 million is an improvement from those horrific numbers, but we're still in this very deep hole. You've got an unemployment rate that's, you know, probably going to hit 25%.
A day after threatening to withhold funds over Michigan's mail-in ballot effort, President Trump is visiting the electoral battleground state today. Democratic Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist says it's not the time for political battles.
It's absolutely unacceptable to politicize anything happening right now in our country, and certainly in our state, where we're dealing with, you know, one of the hardest hit states from COVID-19. We're also dealing with a once in 500 year flood that happened in mid-Michigan.
The U.S. is withdrawing from the Open Skies Treaty, allowing surveillance flights over nations. The U.S. claims Russia's been violating the treaty. The Navy's investigating an active shooter at the Corpus Christi, Texas Air Base this morning. The shooter was neutralized, one security officer hurt. Columbia University says its modeling shows the U.S. could have saved 36,000 lives if it imposed restrictions 1 week earlier. The Dow down 40. I'm Mike Moss.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics. All with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit Dell.com/small-business-deals.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
This is Downtown Dave. How would you like to be able to promote yourself, your business, or someone else's business for less than the cost of one 60-second commercial on many Tampa Bay radio stations? Here's the deal. You can have your own one-hour radio program on the Tan Talk Network for less than the cost of one 60-second announcement on many Tampa Bay stations. Your program will be on two Tampa Bay radio stations and will cover 4 million people in Florida, plus worldwide on the internet in both audio and video. And you'll have a web link for your business on the Tan Talk 1340 website. We provide the producer, the state-of-the-art equipment, free production of commercials, and much more. Check it out today. Call Lola O'Brien, the Irish Hawaiian, at 727-510-7622. That's 510-7622. Call Lola O'Brien now, 727-510-7622. Call now, and your one-hour radio program can start tomorrow. Call 510-7622 for Lola O'Brien, the Irish Hawaiian, at the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Marshall.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Enough
is enough
is enough. And if you've heard enough of the conservative right-wing agenda that overwhelms the Tampa Bay AM radio band, won't you join me, Ed Golly,
and me, Joe Reinhardt, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. for
the voice of reason.
No spin, no alternative facts.
Just refreshing, straight talk concerning the events of the day.
Thursday, 10 a.m., right here on the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is
the radio program
Spectrum 360.
This is Mark Skogman
and TK Weeks,
hosts of Spectrum 360 on the six stations of the TAN Talk Radio Network. Spectrum 360 is a talk radio program that features politics, the arts, and popular culture from a progressive point of view. Spectrum 360 broadcasts for 1 hour weekly on Monday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern Time and anytime via webcast at spectrum360media.com. Remember, Spectrum 360, news, politics, and arts from a creative and progressive point of view.
Hi, this is Paul Molloy, inviting you to join me every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday for Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time here on the TAN Talk Radio Network. On each show, we interview business and political experts, all with the idea of promoting as much individual freedom as we can get. So won't you join and listen in every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time for Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, right here on the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Talking Sports and Knockout Radio is one of, if not the longest running sports radio show in Tampa Bay, and heard every Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m. right here on the TAN Talk Radio Network. From football to MMA and pizza to travel, we talk it all. Every Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m., we walk the walk and talk the talk. If you have a story,